untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is Classic FM from Global.
Real music with Debbie Wiseman.
Now, I've had the privilege of being composer in residence here at Classic FM for 10 years, and the time has just flown by. And to celebrate the 10-year anniversary, I've been asked to invite some very special guests into the studio. Some of the stars that I've had the pleasure of composing music for and collaborating with on some of the various film and TV productions that I've been lucky enough to have been involved with over the past decade. This evening's guest is multi-talented. Her CV reveals a long, distinguished, award-laden career. Actor, comedian, writer, director, a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company, and a regular in The Rover's Return. An agony aunt, an uncanny Joyce Grenfell, and a doting grandmother who seemed to always be on the telephone. And that's just scratching the surface. I'm delighted to welcome the wonderful Dame Maureen Lipman. Maureen, hello, and let's kick off with what links us in the media, if you like, which is Maureen and Friends, your radio show, which started back in 2019. And I had the privilege of writing the music for it, which was great fun. It bookended the stories and anecdotes with piano interludes. How did you bring this particular idea to life?
I wish I could remember, Debbie. I've always loved doing different characters. Now, John Le Mesurier famously said, always play the same part and, if possible, wear the same suit. And that's never been my idea of a good time. I like to be a different person every week. And I started writing monologues, I suppose it must have been the year before lockdown, when you would write monologues. I loved Joyce Grenfell's monologues. I adored playing her for the 5 years on and off, not counting all the memorials and things. I'm still playing Joyce. And also Ruth Draper, who was her relative by marriage of Joyce's. Fabulous, fabulous. I mean, they're plays. It's like, do you like short stories or do you like a big chunky novel, you know? And short stories are a wonderful basis for movies. And every monologue is a character. And I think I started off by writing... I don't know whether this is all relevant, but I started off by writing a woman in a big 4x4 on the Westway who's got a little Balkan woman cleaning her window and she doesn't want it. And she sort of wheels down the window and says, no, thank you, I don't, I've just had it, please don't. And then she looks at her and she says, Alison? And the woman says, no, not Alison. No, I am a red car. And it turns out that this is a woman that she'd been at drama school with years ago, and that she was actually rehearsing a Mike Lee film by being out there all day long cleaning cars. And I don't know where it came from, but once I'd done it, then it led to lots and lots of others.
Did you find that you were looking for those characters? You know, once you started, did you go, you know, were you shopping in a supermarket and looking for somebody that you could write something about? You know, were you looking for those characters or were they already in your
head? They were there, Debbie. They just popped up. And the funny thing is that as soon as I'd done two series, I stopped doing it. You know, when you have a byline, then you write because you have to write.
Well, we're going to head towards a favourite piece of yours, which is a piano piece, actually. And it was part of the soundtrack of the 2002 film The Pianist. Just tell me, before you play the music, a little about the character you played in the movie and the challenges of that particular role.
Well, of course, it was a true story. Spielman was the character, and I suppose I auditioned with every other Jewish actress and some non-Jewish actresses for the role of the mother. And, of course, being as it was Roman Polanski, he was not allowed to come into the country, so we had to do what nowadays every actor is used to, self-taping. But we virtually had to do our own. Frank Finlay and I sat in a room and we had to look into camera and not look at each other during the course of the scene, which we'd learned. And then the news came back that I'd got the role, fairly astounding. And I had to, Polanski insisted that I have grey hair, and I didn't have grey hair. And so he flew me to Paris on a Sunday, and I sat in a hairdresser's chair and had the pigment taken out of my hair, which turned it a shade of sort of verdigris. So I dyed it back. So when he saw me, you know, because it was 5 months ahead, when he saw me, he was furious. So we started out on the worst of terms, but then grew very much, I think, certainly to respect each other for what we did. And it was very prescribed. We rehearsed every scene exactly with every move we were going to make. So there was no room for really
any improvisation or anything.
No. I have enormous respect for that film.
Did you watch it back and love it when you saw it in its entirety?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's a great piece of work. The music is amazing.
It is.
And this particular one I think I've chosen for here is like the first time you see Adrian Brody finding this piano in this house he's arrived at, and he starts to play, and it is so, you know, music cuts through reason, doesn't it? You don't know why a series of notes will make you emotional. But when he's, and the juxtaposition of the Chopin, the empty room, the starving man on the run, and this music is exquisite.
Nocturne No. 20 in C sharp minor by Chopin, played for us here on Classic FM by Janusz Oleniczak from the soundtrack of the 2002 film The Pianist. Now, from one classic film set in wartime, let's move on to your starring role in a landmark TV drama of the 1970s set during the Blitz, The Evacuees, directed by Alan Parker and written, of course, by your late husband, the brilliant Jack Rosenthal. Now, I imagine that you watched this play take shape right from the first draft of the script. Is that right?
Well, you could say that, but, you know, Jack was a sort of writer who wrote by osmosis. You didn't actually see him. He would be in a room and then he'd come out, take the kids to the dentist, come back, go back in the room, and then he'd get up and say, I think I'm going to make some salmon patties, and he'd go to the, you know, in the start chopping onions. And then, so you never really saw it. And of course, at first it was going to be done by the BBC, and then they couldn't afford it, and then it went to Granada. So it was just, just a fait accompli. And then Alan Parker had only done a very short film, I think, called Melody. And, he was a commercials director. And, you know, he's very sort of, Alan was, you know, I'm sure you met him. He was very much like that. Him and Putnam, both boys from the same part of town, tall like that. And you thought, what do they know about Northern Jewish life, you know? But my goodness me, he had the most filmic eye I've ever seen. And even now that play holds up so beautifully.
Oh, amazing. But yeah. It's so interesting that Jack didn't, I mean, there was no room, there was no little shed that he went into and hid himself away for hours. He didn't get that sort of writer's block or have to distance himself from his family to do the work.
No, he was the most unpretentious man you've
amazing.
Ever known. And he didn't distance himself, but he did have writer's block and he did have other things, like With the Knowledge, which I think is probably, arguably, his best play, the one about the London cab drivers. He took it to the producer, Verity Lambert, and he handed it to her and said, that's the final draft. No, it isn't, and took it away. And she pulled it back and he pulled it back. And he said, I've just thought of what's wrong and I'm just going to take it away and make it right. So, yeah, and of course, with someone like that, you know, you tend not to give them the space. My mother regarded Jack as somebody who just sat around the house all day.
Yeah.
You know,
so I know. If you're not actually physically doing something with your hands.
Zelma, I'm not just staring out the window, he'd say to her. And she'd say, oh, am I disturbing you, Jack? And he'd say, well, if it's important, it's fine. Oh, she said, I don't know if it's important or not. He said, well, what is it? And she said, I'm just going to Brent Cross. Does this jumper go with this skirt?
And he's trying to run. It's hilarious. Now, when Jack was the subject of Desert Island Discs back in 1998, he picked a really eclectic selection, including You Make Me Feel So Young by Frank Sinatra and the Manchester United Calypso. And there's two extremes, if ever I heard them. But also Max Brooks' Violin Concerto No. 1.
This particular one has a story because after Jack died, about 3 months after he died, I was in his study and I was typing angrily because somebody was using his work without, applying for the copyright. So I was sitting there and now I'd done something very naughty, which was I'd bought a car that wasn't secondhand. It was the first time in my life. I'd gone out like a sort of mad woman and said, I must have a big present because I'm a widow. And I know I felt terrible about it because I thought people would think I was a merry widow, which I wasn't. But I went out and I bought an Audi with in graphite grey with a maroon-coloured roof. And it just sat on the patio outside, just sat on the drive. And I didn't dare get in it.
I thought you were going to say you can't drive or something, but no, at least you can drive.
I could drive, but, I didn't. And I'm sitting typing this angrily and suddenly the car alarm went off and I thought, how can that happen? I'm nowhere near it. I found the key. I didn't even know how to open or anything. I'd had a test drive and that was it. And I opened the door and the radio was on and it was playing the Brooke Violin Concerto. And it was so much, it was seemed to me to be so obvious that something or somebody who was Jack-like was saying, it's not worth getting in a scrap about stuff that doesn't matter, Maureen.
How amazing.
That's why this song is like my my break. If I'm getting in a tiz whiz, I will put this on.
Let's hear it now.
Thank you.
Yehudi Menuhin with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Pierre Monteur, performing the finale from the Violin Concerto No. 1 by Max Bruch here on Classic FM. My guest this evening is Dame Maureen Lipman. And now, there are a few questions, Maureen, that I'm asking all my guests during this series, and it's a sort of straw poll, if you like. So the first one is, in the same sort of way as a boxer might play a motivational track in the dressing room before going out for a title fight, do you ever use music to help a performance or create the right mood for a character?
I probably don't have music in the dressing room. I have a series of ever-increasing weird noises that I have to make before I go on and do anything.
Are they vocal noises? Yes. Just to get your voice going?
Yes, all of that. Here's a to-do, to-die, today, to mean to-do, a thing hard to say, but a harder thing to do. All of that. And, I keep adding ones all the time. But generally, if you're doing a musical, then you've got sort of warm-up stuff going on stage beforehand, or a pantomime, which I've just done at Richmond at my time of life. So I don't really have motivational music. Like, I can see that you're asking. I see why you're asking your question. But I love the silly music of the 50s. So, I will quite often, not all of it silly, but point numbers. But I'll often play music that's before my time. I mean, Sinatra and Ella. Yeah. And I love jazz. I love nothing better than anything about jazz. But if I go to a jazz concert, I will look at the players. And what I love is the way they have to listen to each other so impeccably in order to know where they have to go. I love that improvisational feel. And that's... I have one motivational thing which happened, which I read at the end of Agnes de Mille's book, and I'm always going on about it. I bore everyone stiff. But for me, this is what real acting has to be. She did. She was a choreographer. She did a wonderful show called Rodeo. And after a while, some months, she went back to see it on Broadway. And afterwards, she came out, and the great choreographer, Martha Graham, was there and congratulated her. And she said, oh, God, I just see all the flaws. All I can see is what's wrong and what I should have done. And Martha Graham took her, great tall woman, took her hands, put them on her shoulders and said, it is not your business to judge your own work in any shape or form. It is only your business to keep the channel open. Because if you don't keep the channel open, that piece of work will never exist in any form whatsoever. And Agnes said, but then there's no satisfaction. And Martha said, no satisfaction ever at any time. Only a queer, divine dissatisfaction, which marks us out and makes us different from the rest. So my point here is that if you are on stage and it's false, what you have to do, or even before you go on, you have to look through the character's eyes and you have to almost physically make your diaphragm open. Where am I? What am I doing? How do I feel? And have the courage to not know what's coming next. Because thinking ahead is fatal.
Did you ever learn an instrument at school? And did you ever want to learn an instrument? Or...
I didn't.
I know you can sing very well. But
I can't sing very well, Debbie. That's very nice of you. I can sing if the character sings. And, of course, I did Glorious, which was Florence...
I was going to talk to you about that. Absolutely. That was our next thing.
Florence Foster Jenkins, not known for being a great singer, but I played her on stage and it was a very, very funny show. this was before Meryl Streep did the film. And actually, I'll tell you, a little secret is that Stephen Frears came to see me before he made that film to talk about Florence Foster Jenkins. And I said to him, who's playing it? Obviously, I wasn't. I mean, I didn't expect that for a moment. He said, Meryl Streep. And I said, oh, that's wrong. What do you mean? I said, she's too self-aware. I said, no, you want Frances McDormand. Anyway,
but how difficult
I went
is
to
it?
See it. She was great.
She was great. But how did you manage to make yourself... Because you can sing. I mean, you're being very... very sort of humble by saying you can't, but you can sing. So how can you learn? Is it very
hard to sing badly?
To sing badly and give it the maximum effect.
Well, I used to get the opera singers coming round and saying, you know, how are you singing three arias and then doing a two-hour play at the same time? And I said, honestly, I've absolutely no idea. You tell me to do something, I will do it. But I did go and have a lesson with Mary Kay at the ENO, and it was a bright summer's day, and I was sitting, I was in the room with her going, and people were queuing outside for tickets, and they were looking up, you know, thinking, what the hell? And even I took a villa in Greece, and I went there, and I practiced alone in the swimming pool, going up and down, and thinking, it was just such fun. And I remember because Princess Alexandra was actually asked to leave the theatre because she was so hysterical. It was a lovely character, absolutely lovely.
Der Hohle Racker, the Queen of the Knights aria from Mozart's opera The Magic Flute, performed for us here on Classic FM, perfectly in tune, by South Korean soprano Sumi Jo with the Berlin Radio Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Roberto Paternostro. This is Real Music with me, Debbie Wiseman, and there'll be more from my guest this evening, Dame Maureen Lipman, in just a few moments, here on Classic FM.
Classic FM.
Sail through the heart of historic cities and unforgettable scenery with Viking. Unpack once and get closer to iconic landmarks local life, and cultural treasures. Because when you experience Europe on a Viking longship, you'll spend less time getting there and more time being there. Learn more at Viking.com. Viking, exploring the world in comfort.
This is your business. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero accounting software. This is managing cash flow. This is managing your cash flow with the help of Xero accounting software. These are your customers paying you. These are your customers having more ways to pay you with the help of Xero accounting software. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero, helping you short your cash flow by giving your customers more ways to pay, so now you can focus on making your business boom. Supercharge your business today with the help of Xero.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dream Stock clearance sale is now on. I bet you beds are excited.
Oh yeah, we're bouncing.
And don't miss up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses.
But don't hang about. You snooze, you lose.
Dreams. Let us find you a bed that loves you back.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow. Which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Excuse me. Inflatable unicorn coming through.
Ooh, why are you wearing that?
Just got my last bit sorted at post office. Travel money card, currency, travel insurance. Got the passport sorted. I'm holiday ready. Next up, cocktails by the pool.
Get holiday ready with less faff. We can help with that. Pop into your local branch or search post office travel. Travel money card issued by First Rate Exchange Services Limited. Pursuant to license by MasterCard International.
Real Music with Debbie Wiseman
on Classic FM.
And my guest this evening is Dame Maureen Lipman. Maureen, do you have a piece that you regularly return to? And if so, why that particular piece?
I remember doing music appreciation at school in Hull, and there was the Elizabethan Serenade, and music's like Proust's Madeleines, isn't it? You know, you hear something and it takes you back to where you were at that time. There are certain pieces which have become a bit hackneyed, if you like.
Overplayed, perhaps.
Overplayed. Yeah, yeah. And that sort of upsets me, because one of those is the Massenet, the Meditations on the Taste. And when I first heard that, I just thought it was magical. When my daughter was at university doing creative writing in Birmingham, she wrote a play called Sitting Pretty. And it was about two sisters, middle-aged sisters, one very dominant and the other one very large. And the large one goes into pick the sister up from the actors, and she sees this advert for modelling. And in her way, she doesn't realise what modelling for an art class means. And she goes in, and because the art teacher has been told by his girlfriend, who was a former model, if you do that to any of the models again, I'm leaving you. He goes for this large lady. You know, he's thrilled to have someone who he won't fancy. And she sort of suddenly, slowly realises that she's got to take her clothes off in front of people for the first time in her life. And we had this magical girl who played it in America, because it was picked up while she was still at university. And it went to the 59th Street Y. And then a week before it closed there, the person playing the mean sister, she got a job, and it was non-profit, so she had to go. So I had to learn the play in a week, get on a plane and go over there and play it for the last week, which was extraordinary. And the representative of Equity said to me, "If anything happens to this play, you, Miss Lipman, are on the next plane home." I said, fine. And I did it and I played it. And then on the last day, I got consumed with the beauty of it all. And I said to the audience, I have to tell you that a week ago I was sitting in Muswell Hill, England, not knowing I was going to be here, and told them the story. Oh, isn't that cute? She's the mother of the girl who wrote the part. Oh, that's so fabulous. And big round of applause. And then as I was going back to my dressing room, little man springs out and says, good afternoon, Miss Lippman. I'm Alan Eisenberg. I'm the equity representative. So I said, well, I am on the next plane home, don't worry. But the point of the story is that the end of Act One, she took off her clothes and went from being abject, despairingly self-conscious, to realising that nobody was actually in the class looking at her. They were looking at a series of pieces of skin, of bone, of flesh. They were trying to get the right colour. And before your very eyes, this large, lumpy woman turned into a Rubens. And he said, the teacher, we'll put some music on, you know. And this was the music that was played.
Thank you.
the Meditation from Massenet's Thaïs, the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Daniel Harding and soloist Nicola Benedetti. Maureen, do you enjoy live concerts, live performances, and who do you enjoy watching perform live? And who have you met from the classical music world who you really admire?
Well, I do like going to concerts. I find it the most, what's the opposite of enervating? I love going to concerts. I don't go to nearly enough, of course. I don't do any of the things that I should do and like doing. I've just been to the Israel Philharmonic when I was in Tel Aviv, and it was sublime. And, of course, having done the odd musical, if you're in a hit, then everybody comes to see it, and that's very thrilling. So when I was in Wonderful Town, which was 1987, I think, in Watford, of all places, imagine how I felt when they said, Lenny's in tonight. I thought they meant, Lenny Henry. I thought it meant Lenny Henry. But no, it was, in fact, Leonard Bernstein, who came with his daughter, who was then sort of 20, in her late 20s, to see this show at Watford. And he was just so amazing afterwards. He first of all, the presence of the man with his leonine hair and his turquoise macrame sweater and his tan leather trousers. Whoa, wow, men and women would fall for that. And he literally took my chin in his hands and said, you are something, he said.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen it played like that, he said. And I was so overcome with the moment that when we closed, we transferred to London, and when we closed in London, I wrote a letter to him. And it was about the last night, because I'm always intrigued by the way that different actors in the same company on the same night can have completely different feelings about a show. I said to him, I felt this, and I was on top of the world, and I went through the curtains, and my leading man held the curtain for me, and he said, how much do you pay in car insurance? And then I said, and we did this, and I packed up, and I was singing, I was on top of the world, and I just wrote this letter. I didn't expect a reply. I didn't get a reply. And then years, 30 years later, I went to see Jamie Bernstein, the daughter who'd been there. I just went to Anna Pavlova House. She was giving a talk about Bernstein's book of letters. He was a prolific letter writer. And I just sat there at the back, and afterwards I bought a copy and I went to her, and she looked at me and she said, you're Maureen. And I said, I am. She said, I came to see your show. And I said, I know you did. I wasn't going to say anything, but he wrote that show when you were born, didn't she? She said, but you're in the book. I said, how do you mean? He said, he kept your letter about the last night. And if you look at that book of letters, there is my childish letter to Leonard Bernstein. And, certainly Wonderful Town and Oklahoma were the most thrilling shows to be in. I mean, the Hugh Jackman, Trevor Nunn, Oklahoma, which on and off we played for nearly a year. And this was before anybody had heard of Hugh Jackman, but we all knew from the first day he took his shirt off. We all knew. And it was thrilling, because people said to me, you can't be in a musical if you don't have your own number. And Trevor Nunn said to me, it doesn't matter. He said, I'm going to make you the heart of this musical. And he sure did.
Leonard Bernstein's Overture to Candide, performed there by the New York Philharmonic under the baton of the composer. Now, Maureen, I'd like to close with Habanera from Bizet's Carmen. Now, I've actually conducted Carmen, and it's the most wonderful piece of work. And I wondered what appealed to you. Is it the Spanish dancing? Is it the acting in it? Is it the way you've just seen loads of Carmens. I mean, what is it about it that's so special for you to choose it?
Yeah,
you know, as one of your
I don't know why I chose it. I mean, I think again, you know, one is overwhelmed by the number of choices that one could make. I find it unbelievably exciting music. And my favourite was, of course, the Carlos Sauras flamenco. Combined my love of the sound of flamenco with my love of Carmen. And when I saw it, you know, it's like when I first watched Colin from Accounts. It's like I sit on the edge of the chair and I think, they've written this for me. And the sound, before you go into that movie, of the feet on the floor doing and I can feel this build-up. It's almost like another worldliness from another life I might have led. You know, the mixture of the soft and the sensuous with the thudding of the feet. Oh,
yeah, I know. It's incredibly sexy, the whole thing.
Very, very sexy, yeah. Prière.
Habanera from Carmen. Rosie Middleton, the soloist there, the National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by me, Debbie Wiseman. And all that remains is for me to say thank you, Dame Maureen Lipman, for sharing your stories, sharing your music with us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in the Classic FM studio.
Thank you, Debbie. It's been lovely. I fear that my choice is a bit conventional, and I think that is because I have yet really to learn about classical music. I'm saving it for my last decade.
There's plenty of time to learn. There's always plenty of time. Thank you, Maureen.
God bless. Thank you.
Classic FM.
Sail through the heart of historic cities and unforgettable scenery with Viking. Unpack once and get closer to iconic landmarks, local life, and cultural treasures. Because when you experience Europe on a Viking longship, you'll spend less time getting there and more time being there. Learn more at Viking.com. Viking. Exploring the world in comfort.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the financial ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Hold an afternoon tea this August and raise money for Breast Cancer Now. Get your fundraising kit today. Search Breast Cancer Now Afternoon Tea.
At Matalan, style comes in threes. Grab three for two across all Matalan women's wear, including dresses, tops and denim, plus holiday bits, PJs, lingerie, footwear and accessories. Exclusively in your nearest Matalan store. T's and C's apply. Cheapest item free.
Find top-rated wellness products on Amazon, like these aromatherapy candles with five-star reviews. I smell fantastic value. Or this essential oils massage set. Oh, that's better. Oops, drifted off. And this single-serve coffee machine, back in the room. Amazon, find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
Try Classic FM's popular dating site and meet someone who shares your values, interests and love of music. Sign up for free at classicfmromance.com.
This is Classic FM. From Global.
In the mood for a Friday night chill-out session? Well, look no further than the 3 hours of music that I have lined up for us to enjoy before Katie takes over at one. Sarti, Debussy, and the flooding back of an ocean of memories on the way. That's after more than 10 minutes of feet-up time with Rachmaninoff.
Classics with Mylene Klass
on Classic FM.